some cheap sunglasses coming back in. All right, guys, we got a question this week from our good friend Bill Murray. It is a financial planning type question. So what we did, we don't have a financial planner on the show today, but we asked our friend Jarrett McKenzie, our financial planning planning and implementation department, to come on, read the question and answer. And here you go. We'll come right back, probably take a quick break shortly thereafter.
All right, so we've got another question from my good friend Bill Murray this week. He says, I don't have $5 million worth of assets, but I do have $5 million worth of catastrophic liability insurance, which happens to be my carrier's maximum. Am I overinsured is his question, and what are the guidelines for determining the appropriate amount of catastrophic insurance? Well, Bill, actually, there's not any strict guidelines, I would say, and I would also say that it's very difficult to be overinsured when it comes to catastrophic insurance, because unlike life or disability insurance, for instance, a perfect catastrophic liability is virtually limitless, since the claims could theoretically continue into perpetuity. So I could easily make a case that someone's only overinsured to the extent that they are unable to reasonably cover the premium payment for the policy in question. So in other words, you know, does your income stream comfortably cover the cost of carrying the policy? If so, then carrying that amount makes it easier for you to sleep at night. I'd say that's probably the way to go, but that can vary greatly between individuals, so whether or not there's lacking or excess coverage is very circumstantial. Now, that being said, this type of insurance is relatively low cost, so carrying coverage that is far in excess of your asset value or net worth is certainly not unreasonable, so long as it's providing you with some peace of mind and is supported by your income stream. So really, this is a matter of opportunity cost and sort of peace of mind, you know, what helps you sleep at night. There's not a gauge that would apply to everyone, but I would say that, you know, again, if your income stream supports it and you're comfortable with the amount that you have, then that's the appropriate amount for you. And it's very difficult to be overinsured regardless of what that number might be for you.
All right. Well, there you go. Our question from good friend Bill Murray and an answer from Jarrett. The only thing that I would add is, you know, a couple of ways that you can think about whether or not you need more insurance is some of the risks that you have. You know, if you have a pool in your yard, you probably have a heightened risk relative to the average. If you have a dog, I was reading an article a couple of weeks ago. I almost made my dog of the week. You know, when you think about having certain breeds of dogs and the complications that you can get into, a dog bite incident.
Yeah.
The average cost from a dog bite incident is somewhere between $30,000 and $60,000. And I would, you know, when I think of this, I usually go right to the pit bull, but actually Rottweilers tend to have higher costs than a pit bull. So, thinking of something, is that what it is?
I got to ask, do you have added insurance for your two dogs?
No, they're miniature dachshunds. I don't think we really have to worry about.
Not a lot of attacks,
yeah,
huh?
And, well, I mean, they are kind of aggressive, but about the worst you're going to get is a hole torn in your pants. Not too bad from a weenie dog attack. You know, when you consider that, but no, I don't have excess insurance. But the other thing that you ought to do is make sure that your insurance carrier knows of those added risks as well, because quite often if you don't disclose it, they'll tell you you should have. You know, so anyway, that's just my two cents on top of what Jarrett had. Guys, we got a question here from Harold from Kennesaw. Let me give out the number one more time, 770-429-9166. If you've got your questions, financial questions, we'd love to hear them, answer them on the air. Or, again, email us, drgene@hensler.com. That's spelled H-E-N-S-S-L-E-R. Or go to our website and get information that we post there. So Harold from Kennesaw says, what's going on with consumer staples right now? I understand the economy is still going strong. The volatility of late has been normal. I would agree with that. So I'm not expecting a flight to defensive stocks, but I really didn't expect to see consumer staples down 10% on average, much less some of the holdings down 20% or more. Why are consumer discretionaries getting a pass? Part of it I mentioned when Nick was talking about consumer discretionaries. One of the big things that's floating the overall group is the fact that Amazon is in the middle of consumer discretionaries, makes up a larger than normal weight within that group. But let's talk for a second about consumer staples.
Yeah, so if you're looking year to date, it's the worst performing sector in the S&P 500, down 14.65%. How often is that the case?
Not very often. And if you measure from the top of the market, we're down, what, 17%? If you go back to January 26, 17.2%.
Right.
Through this week. So, you know, some of the companies that we're seeing, and, you can only assume that rates have something to do with it.
Yeah, sure. And, I mean, if you dig down, if you look at the industry level, you've got the worst performing industry within consumer staples is household and personal products, down 17.24% year to date. Food, beverage, and tobacco is down 14.81%. And then you've got food and staples. Retailing is holding up much better. It's down 6.67%.
Yeah.
So you're seeing the biggest drag in the household and personal products. And obviously, as we've seen, tobacco has been struggling as well.
Yeah, part of that is because it seems like consumers aren't really taking up electronic cigarettes as quickly as would have been expected.
I think that's more an international story. I think that's overblown personally. But
I do too. But you're seeing some of the dividend yields in these stocks over 4%.
Right. Yeah, very attractive yields.
Which usually makes us a little bit fearful. But if you look deeper, all of them have a dividend coverage ratio of higher than one, meaning their earnings are more than
sufficient to cover that dividend.
Right. And, you know, earnings are kind of tainted from the point of view of a financial analyst because they have non-cash items, you know, included in there, which make earnings lower than cash flows often are.
Right. I think there's two main stories. There's the one you mentioned with the rates up. I mean, most of these are high dividend yield stocks. They become less attractive as bond yields move up. But I think overarchingly, there's kind of a story here of the millennial generation and trying to reach those consumers. Not only have we seen less household formation overall, not, you know, strong organic growth in these products.
Sure.
But it's difficult to find those distribution channels that make sense. I mean, if you think about like the Dollar Shave Clubs of the world, they've been disruptive. And some of the companies that I've been looking at recently have been trying to move into those categories that make sense that could drive growth in the future because their core products, I mean, population growth isn't what it was a decade or two ago,
right?
Their core products aren't performing. So they've been getting into things like pet food, like these sorts of things that really register to the younger demographic.
This also makes me think of something else the three of us have talked about often is kind of brand loyalty as far as millennials are concerned. And you know, I'll speak to this, you'll speak to this, but I feel as though there is very little. So you have these kind of startups that come out of nowhere. I think there's a company called like No Label or something like that where it's a generic. It'll say, you know, this is cleaner or this is green beans, whatever it may be. And it's cheaper. It's the same thing in our minds, and we'll go after those products.
Right.
And then brandless is the name of it.
Yeah. And then when you have the companies, you know, the bigger known names, those that are well established that are going after those demographics and that market, it erodes profitability, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and maybe you guys disagree, but if you think about the last time we had inflation pressures or expectations like we have now, right? Amazon was not the powerhouse that it was. Online retailing wasn't what it is today.
And what it is,
and I think that's forcing pricing pressures on a lot of these companies too.
Sure,
you don't. You
it
can't,
could be. I feel like staples have less of an e-commerce presence overall.
I would agree. Relative to a lot of discretionary items, but I think that people are buying a lot more of those items online. A lot of those aren't planned purchases.
Fair enough, but if you get past Amazon and you want to say, okay, consumer discretionary as a whole is outperforming consumer staples, I think some of that is these e-commerce distribution channels. You're probably more likely to buy shoes or clothes online than you are, you know, a steak.
The advent now of being able to buy a steak and get it within an hour.
You're right.
That's
you're
changing.
It's not just changing.
Amazon. That's, you know, that's Kroger. That's Walmart.
Right. Right. And those are some of the ideas that we like the best.
Sure.
To be able to play the staples from kind of an agnostic brand perspective.
Yeah. Guys, we got another question here. We only have a couple of minutes to answer it, but I think y'all are the right group to speak to this, so I want to cover it. Caleb from Douglasville says, I've seen the increase in gas prices and other commodities. Is there anything going on behind that? And our answer is, yeah, absolutely. Part of it is the fact that we see an increase in crude oil prices, which always flow through at some point.
Right.
I mean, they might not immediately, but, you know, the folks at retail gas surely like to put the price in there as soon as they can see it so that they don't lose, get squeezed in the profit margin. But, Jacob, you got any other ideas?
I think there's a few quick hits here. First of all, I mean, you had the U.S. leading the cycle, so the dollar kind of strengthened mm-hmm. over the past few years. But with the fiscal expansion that we've seen, where we added about $1 billion to the deficit, that's put some pressure on the dollar.
And sure.
Commodities are cost and are priced in dollar terms. Additionally, I mean, we had the collapse of 2015, and it feels like we're getting to the point where we might have an undersupplied market. On top of that, if you look at one of my favorite charts, and I've showed both of you guys, if you look at commodities relative to equities, just take a commodities index divided by the S&P 500, for instance.
Right.
We haven't seen the levels that we're at now in a couple decades. So it feels like the time where we're moving from what was the deflation of the 2000s, late 2000s, to kind of an inflationary period where a good way to, you know, get yourself out of the way of, you know, some inflation or even stagflation is to take a little bit as a hedge, put it in some commodities.
Yeah, and we're not talking exactly about precious metals. We're just talking about commodities in general.
Yeah, broad basket.
Yeah. All right, well, we've come to the end of our show. Guys, what do you think? Market up or down this week?
Next week, market's going to be up.
All right, I say it's up. Jacob?
Oh, God.
All right. Money Talks, we're out. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.